speaker was sitting comfortably at the luncheon table, and you Newton comes over and slaps him on the shoulder and breaks the news that instead of listening this afternoon, reported the program. Tony Snow, as I mentioned, is leaving the country tomorrow and had to beg out at the last minute. Ken Burrows proves that you can go home again. He grew up in Orange County, California. His first job in newspaper was with the Orange County Register. He later edited and published a string of small dailies and weeklies in upstate New York. I became aware of his work when he was the national edition editor, the deputy editorial page, editor of the Washington Times. He's now editorial and commentary director, again, at the Register in Orange County, California, which is a flagship for Freedom Newspapers Incorporated. Ken?
Thank you, Joe. I hope I can make some sense of these notes that I sketched down during Warren's speech today. I took many readings from the left coast, from the conservative libertarian paradigm, Orange County. I remember some 15 years ago when Stan Evans was speaking out there, and his first remarks were, "I have seen the future of the networks." Orange County is indeed working, growing, thriving. It's not without its problems in housing and transportation and so on. But that simply gives us lots of good issues to write about. I wanted to fill in one more point about the biographical notes, and that is that I was twice in Washington, not just once. I was there in 1969 and 70, first as editor of the New Guard, Young Americans for Freedom, and then as a staffer for Human Events, but I went back to California. And I guess the reason I wanted to bring that up was that I was thinking about Fred Barnes' remarks today, that whereas it is indeed the case that Washington, D.C. seems to be the destination of all young journalists, Fred was advising them to start in smaller communities and smaller papers, and that is extremely sound advice. I endorse it entirely. But to the Barnes doctrine, I would offer the Grubbs corollary, which is that if you do arrive at the destination in D.C., it is well to spend a couple of years there and get out and go home, because there really is this sense of hubris that develops in Washington. I don't suppose I have to tell you that, but it's there, and it affects not only functionaries in the bureaucracy and indeed even idealistic Reaganites, but it affects journalists as well. And the only question, I guess, is that if Sam Donaldson or Bob Woodward were to go to a small community back west somewhere, the question would be, could they indeed cover the courthouse with the skill and competence that some of the reporters for, say, the Orange County Register or the Sacramento Union might cover? And I dare say, I have to wonder about their skill. I suppose what I can give you is a little background on my newspaper, which is the Orange County Register. It's the third largest newspaper in the state of California. It's not often reported. We're doing very well. I hasten to point out that even though we're the third largest, there's a very large gap in our circulation, which on some days is 420,000 and weekdays is 350,000. Huge gap between us and the San Francisco Chronicle, which is number two, and then number one is the Los Angeles Times, which makes a huge gap. However, in Orange County, the territory where it counts, the Register is clobbering the LA Times in 100,000 lead, and there are a lot of reasons for that. Though the Times has gotten quite aggressive in the last year or so. But I guess a little background on the Register would be in order. The Register was purchased, it was a small community paper called the Santa Ana Register, in 1935 by R.C. Coyles, who moved out from Ohio and had a paper, Little Rain or Cyrus or someplace. And bought the Register, and with Orange County, that newspaper grew to the size that it is today. But Coyles, insisted on calling himself a libertarian, not so much a conservative, although certainly his instincts and values were conservative. But I guess he preferred libertarian because he'd watched too many of his friends who went into local politics and attained elected office in the Orange County area, who swore that their fidelity to conservative principles, but once in office, drifted away. He saw that happen repeatedly. And he began to get allergic to the very word conservative. And so he preferred, even back in the 1940s, the word libertarian to describe his beliefs. R.C. was a great businessman, but he loved economics, but he loved to tie economics to moral principles. In the Credo statement that ran for years over the editorials, for design purposes, we've stopped running that, though I wish we continue to run it. He used to say that we follow immutable principles as laid down in the Ten Commandments and the Declaration of Independence and so on. But he also, very interestingly, in his homespun way, reasoned. He was a practitioner of what he called close reasoning, or the Socratic method, with which he made himself a nuisance around the newsroom. But he reasoned that whereas it is immoral for an individual to steal from another individual, it is equally immoral for a group to steal from another person. And inasmuch as a government, however duly constituted, is nothing but a group of individuals, that it also is immoral for the government to tax people. Revolutionary idea, quite radical, actually went over quite well for the country, but it always set the politicians' teeth on edge. That, by the way, also sort of predated the supply side movement by a couple of decades. So anyway, R.C. reasoned that we shouldn't have government schools, which he insisted that news reporters call tax-supported schools. That's since been brought from the newsroom's lexicon. But anyway, he was a great friend, even though he was a professing Christian. He was a great friend of Ayn Rand's and Henry Hazlitt's and Leonard Reed. He's very close to Leonard Reed. And he actually financed the translations of some of Frederick Bastiat's works and got them distributed around this country. But R.C. died at, I guess he's about 92 years old, in 1970. And the Register and Freedom Newspapers, which is 28 newspapers across the country, 5 television stations now, still own, it's still in the family. And there have been some disputes in the family and so on, but it's still owned by people who call themselves libertarian, but whose values are nonetheless quite conservative, and I share those values. But in 1980, we hired an editor to kind of spruce up the Register. It really needed to. R.C., for all of his virtues, was skinflint. He didn't put a lot of capital into the Register. Paid very little, and so on. And facing competition with the LA Times, it was decided that we needed to put some capital into the paper, we needed to spruce it up, we needed to get real. We hired an editor who had a great background from Seattle, who had a great background in graphics, and this newspaper design, kind of a wunderkind in contemporary journalism, and Chris Anderson. But we separated. But Chris brought no philosophical values to the paper. He's done wonders to the paper. But we then separated the news gathering department from the editorial pages, and that's where it stands now. We brought the report independently to the publisher, who remains libertarian. Leads to some interesting clashes from time to time. Indeed, it's true that most of the reporters, they do admirable work, won a Pulitzer or two, but I dare say that they don't share our values, and so I suppose sometimes the paper appears kind of schizoid. But I think we by the newsroom, by the daddy, sometimes, the positions we take in the editorial pages. We, for example, we, for at least four decades, the Register, long before this current trend in newspapering, refused to endorse candidates for office. And it's, that's something that I rather like. I'm very comfortable with that, because I don't like to be, I don't like the perception that we're wedded to a politician. I think that is unhealthy. Plus, that's kind of a prudential reason, but a philosophical one is we simply don't want to encourage people that collecting other people to office is going to mean their salvation. We were somewhat embarrassed recently when a former editorial writer of ours, Dana Rohrabacher, went to work at the White House as a speechwriter, then he came back, ran for Congress, and won. I had to write a column, a friendly column, but I had to explain that Dana would have to do without my endorsement. And when he won, we ran off and to celebrate and made an illegal entry into Burma. But we have, as I said, we have proposed tax-supported schools for compulsory education. We think we've been much vindicated by that position. Nonetheless, it's still controversial. Housing matters. Housing is a great problem in Orange County. I suppose the average cost of a house is somewhere near $200,000. And we have pointed out repeatedly that it's the permit process and zoning regulations and so on that have contributed mightily to the absence of affordable housing in Orange County. For years, we took the eccentric view that such customarily public services as road building would be better done in the private sector. This was a position, I remember these debates way back in Americans for Freedom, when we were thought to be crazy for advocating, as David Friedman did, selling the streets. But sure enough, we've finally gotten Sacramento, the governor, Caltrans, and so on, to agree that the way out of our traffic gridlock in Orange County is through more private roads, toll roads, and so on, and that's beginning to happen. We have taken the position, we did it years ago before lots of other newspapers, well, a few other newspapers followed with controversial positions, not popular in Orange County, but that drugs ought to be legalized. And we think that's not so much just for libertarian purposes, but we think it's conservative reasoning as well, that a government that can't solve something as intractable as poverty cannot solve something as probably even more intractable as drug addiction. I've said that we don't endorse candidates. We do take positions on the multiplicity of ballot issues that are presented to Californians and to local voters. And it's very interesting that in Orange County, we're driving the LA Times nuts, but we tend to have, voters tend to follow our recommendations. There was a slow growth initiative on the ballot 2 years ago, which the Times endorsed, and which in fact the polls showed was going to pass. And when we got, when we finally started making our editorial recommendations and arguments, the polls showed that voter sentiment turned around totally on that issue. The only thing, the only factor that happened between those polls was Register editorials. That's happened on a sales tax initiative and a couple other major issues locally. But one of the things that I guess I'm really sort of delighted in the past year or so, but I'm also disappointed in, was that in Orange County, one of the largest cities is a comparatively new city, 17 years old, called Irvine, California. And in recent years, we have suffered under a mayor, his name is Larry Hagerin, who is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, but he did that, and even lied about his membership down through the campaign. And but he was a menace for lots of reasons, not only because he was a slow broker and a demagogue against developers and so on, but also because he was the founder and executive director of something called the Local Government Project, which is an arm of another of his creations, the Center for Innovative Diplomacy, which argued that municipalities should formulate their own foreign policies. He was also responsible, and of course you can imagine what kind of foreign policy he had. He also was very proud of the fact that he authored model local legislation to ban CFCs, which of course, as we all know, are depleting the ozone layer. I found a scientist at the University of California, Riverside, who debunked that theory, and by the way, I'm surprised that that one hasn't been debunked widely either. But anyway, we wrote lots of editorials against Ingram, but I'm a little reluctant to say it in public because for office political reasons, I don't like to get into these things, but it was fairly clear that our newsroom was not going to go after Ingram, cover him in the manner that he deserved. And I think they rather liked the fact that there was this maverick heterodox mayor in Orange County, known for his conservatism. So I got in touch with the young man who I wish were here, by the way. He's one of the rising stars in conservative journalism. His name is David Brock. David worked at Insight for a time and has written lots of investigative pieces for the American Spectator. And I thought that David was just the sort of man who left Larry Ingram. I put him onto the story. He came out, interviewed an unsuspecting Ingram who heard about this publication called the American Spectator, figured it would be national publicity, and just hit. And David did a wonderful job in the Spectator, probably saw it on the evil emperor of Berlin, California. We then reprinted it in our Sunday commentary section. Of course, this wasn't going to appear in our news sections. That was then reprinted and distributed to every doorstep in Irvine, and happily, Mr. Ingram was defeated last June. I got wind of that when I was in Prague during the elections there. Joyous occasion. That was for those results when I was in Prague. Anyway, I don't know where this is leading. I'm following some random notes here. But I suppose we are somewhat, I almost use a phrase that I was taught in journalism school, which I never use, somewhat unique. But we are. I think we're very unusual in the journalism business to run editorial pages. We are. We believe, this will sound arrogant, but I think that it is rather confident, not arrogant. We believe in our principles. We believe that it is our responsibility as editors to print the truth as we see it. We have a great deal of confidence in these principles, and we don't even run pieces on our op-ed pages that advocate status solutions. We run pieces across the left-right spectrum, but only when those columns support a generally libertarian or free market position on things. Give a lot of criticism for that, but I can tell you that our pages are read and admired by a lot of people. I was at a national conference of editorial writers meeting just last week in Orlando, and there was a sort of post-convention reception where I ran into Reese Claiborne, whom some of you know, is a journalism professor at the University of Maryland and a splendid fellow, and if you read the Washington Journalism Review, you would know his work. He's widely admired in the profession. And when I told him about what we were doing at the Register, his party, we've been through a whole week of conventioning and panels and so on, his comment was, good Lord, I've been waiting all week to meet somebody like you, because here's an editorial page that actually stands for something, it writes with conviction and passion and lets its position be known, so you disagree with our views. But it's nonetheless something that's very much missing in contemporary journalism. And we aim to keep that going and get Orange County registered. I guess I'll stop there.